I was Michael Mosley's producer on Just One Thing for 3 years. I think Michael's legacy was making health and well-being fun and light and entirely doable. He really cared about public health, and he cared about people taking charge of their health and of their well-being.
If you were going to try Just One Thing to improve your mental and physical well-being, what should it be?
To celebrate Michael Mosley, join us tomorrow for Just One Thing Day on Radio 4 and across the BBC.
And if you want to get involved, head over to BBC Sounds and search for Just One Thing to remind yourself of all the health and well-being tips that Michael shared. And don't forget to listen out for opportunities to share your experiences with your favourite programmes. Now on Radio 4, Rhys James is back with research. This week he's tackling National Pride.
Many people have big life questions.
Are fish animals? Why is cheese so expensive? And how many room keys will serve you?
But the only way to find the answers is by speaking to the experts or reading the information. No one has time for that. My name is Rhys James, and I'm not an expert, but my diary is empty. I'll ask the questions you don't think to. I'll get the answers you didn't know you wanted.
I have tried flapping my arms many times and it has not worked.
I'll do the research. As in research. My name is Rhys. It works written down.
You're through to research. Please leave your name and question, and I'll have an answer for you within one calendar week. Beep.
Yeah, hiya. So I've been thinking lately about, like, National Pride. Like, how in some countries it seems quite fun, like a party, but then in others it gets a bit weird and it makes people go really red. So, yeah, it's like, is it weird then, or is it okay to be proud of your country? All right, cheers.
It's big, it's massive, and it's absolutely huge. Earth. The only planet in our solar system known to sustain countries. Where once there was a single landmass called Pangaea, we soon voted to expand into smaller islands and drew lines across them to create shapes called nations. We designed rectangular logos and wrote little theme tunes for these shapes, and responded to any criticism by invading the shapes of others and taking their flavours. But could this actually be a bad thing? Is being proud of your nation illogical, given we have no choice in where we're born and it sometimes rains where we are? Or does it make perfect sense when most of the other nations have weird outfits? These days, most countries behave like exclusive nightclubs, constantly telling you how amazing they are while refusing to let you in, especially in those shoes. Some worry national pride is just a stepping stone to something more sinister, like being proud of your town or becoming house proud. But for many, patriotism isn't inherently bad. It's just another thing ruined by racists, like bulldogs or doing funny accents for a laugh. So should we switch our national pride for national shame? Or could patriotism be the solution to climate change? To find out more, I spoke to British political campaigner Femi Olawole, who, despite all the difficulties of the last few years, is still a keen believer in Twitter. Femi, hi.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. No, let me finish. Let me get a word in. So,
sorry.
Tell us, why does national pride always seem to lead to bunting?
I think because bunting tends to go with flags, and I think that's the best way to get multiple flags.
Multiple flags, is it?
And so bunting sort of lends it to that.
Put them all in a line on a string. Yeah, that is good. What actually is national pride then, if you don't mind my asking? And just bear in mind, you're on speakerphone.
National pride is a sense of joy derived from community and being happy about the accomplishments and the values of the country that you're born in. That usually can be quite a healthy thing, but some people can take it too far to the point that actually damaging national pride.
Tinsel? Would that work instead of bunting, do you think, tinsel? It's not flags, is it? But you could get the right colours and that would be a nice way to show it.
I think it would be definitely too Christmassy. I think it would kind of take the shine off that if we start using tinsel throughout the year.
I'll keep thinking about it. So what about Britain then, where we're from? Is that a good one to be proud of?
I'd say that while there were good things in the past, we did a lot of bad things. The British Empire caused suffering and death and slavery across the world.
Oh, Femi, if you're going to slag off Britain, do you mind if we put some patriotic music under it, just so we don't lose that half of the audience?
Yeah, sure. Or something by the Spice Girls.
Yeah, it'll be Spice Girls adjacent, I'm sure.
So, for example, if our country has gained certain advantages over other countries because of the things we've done. We stole their resources, etc., their people. We made them build things for us. We enriched ourselves. We should then have foreign policies that reflect the fact that those countries have been put at a disadvantage. So it's not about saying that we should hate ourselves. It's about saying, look, we had a leg up. So yes, there are things that we can be proud of in our past, and things that we should be ashamed of in our past.
Well, yeah, but nobody's perfect. I mean, people are proud of their children, but they don't share. They snatch things. They're loud on holiday. They don't like trying foreign foods. They're little mini Englands. But we don't feel awkward saying we're proud of them, do we?
So that's the thing. There's lots in our history that we can be proud of, but the issue comes when people start saying things like, this person was good, and don't talk about his bad. Don't talk about the bad things that we did.
Cocktail sticks maybe with flags on instead of bunting?
Oh.
That's an idea.
Maybe.
So why can't we just celebrate our achievements then? I mean, we came up with the internet and Angel Delight.
There's a phrase that nationalism is being proud of things you've never done by people you've never met, and somehow thinking that makes you better than other people. Being proud of your country should never be used as a reason for an actual decision. Like, it shouldn't justify anything because you weren't there.
Well, I wasn't there for any of that bad stuff you talked about earlier either, if you'll do me the honour of being fair to me for once.
Okay, yeah.
So if it's so complicated being proud of Britain, should we just be proud of another country, you know? Or is that sort of like turning up at sports day and cheering on someone else's kids?
Yeah, I mean, International Sports Day does have a ring to it.
So should I just pick the newest country and be proud of them? Because they're less likely to have done much wrong. You know, looks like it's 2011, South Sudan.
Mm.
Should we go with that one? Look,
there's definitely human rights abuses going on there. So I don't think that would be a great source of national pride.
Human rights, they're only 13.
But your point about potentially starting a new country so that you've got a fresh slate.
Oh, that's a good idea. We could start a new country who have never done anything wrong. And then to make it good, we just take all the best bits from all the other countries, you know, culturally, a few artifacts, pop it all in our country, and then we could have national pride.
And then charge them to come see it. That is an option, but I think the more we can try and avoid taking from other countries would probably help with the national pride thing.
Confetti. That's what we should do instead of bunting. Get loads of little flags that way.
Yeah, that feels very British.
Cheers, Femi.
International
surveys of the world's most patriotic nations frequently have the USA top of the charts as the country whose citizens say it's the best country. The actual best country, however, is Switzerland, according to a survey done on a number of metrics, such as business, heritage, and the chance you'll one day meet Roger Federer. Finland has topped the charts for happiness 7 years in a row, as well as being number one in coffee drinking and lowest expectations, and how often they get to sit in a sauna and pour water on the coals and hear it go tss. So in terms of actually being the best nation, USA aren't even in the top 10. But as long as they continue to think they're number one, they will be number one of something, which is the Thinking You're Number One contest, and thus can continue their incessant chance of we're number one, making them also number one at loopholes. Now, Femi, have you ever looked at a patriotism survey, or have you been busy?
The
nations in the top 10, you've got USA, obviously, but then you've got India, Ireland, Canada, New Zealand, Australia. Now, all of these were at one point, may I remind you, owned by Britain. So all of their pride is thanks to us.
Yeah, trickle-down pride. That's a fun way to look at it. We should be proud of the fact that these countries now have at least relative freedom from us. I know Australia still has the ties, but...
Exactly. Freedom from us. If we never went there, they'd never have had to get independence, they wouldn't have national pride now, and those Australians wouldn't even know what a tie is.
Well...
So do you think if we got captured for a bit and then had to set ourselves free, we'd suddenly become more proud, like those countries? And we could do it like a sort of big geopolitical escape room, you know? We all club in together. Maybe one of the scarier countries, like China, chucks a big cage over us for a bit. We got to find the key. Would that be good, Femi?
Yeah, I think if the world ganged up on the UK and we got through that, that would be definitely adversity and we'd all pull together. I think, yeah, that could make us proud.
Yeah, great. Now, be honest, which is the best country?
I don't think I'd give an answer to that.
But come on, surely you admit that some countries are just better than others. I mean, do you really think that Moldova and North Korea have anything on us other than being slightly better answers on pointless?
So I would argue that there are definitely governments that are better than others. But to argue that some populations are better gets you into a very dangerous place.
A dangerous place like, say, North Korea? Yeah. But every country has its pros and cons, doesn't it? You know, Scandinavia, great life expectancy, great public services, but it's freezing and their sandwiches don't have tops and the people are rude. America, freedom and corn dogs, but the freedom's gone so far they've got to have metal detectors in schools. And as I say, corn dogs, plus they're rude. You know, Singapore, there's no crime, but they're locking everyone up for nothing, even just being a bit rude. Japan, futuristic, good technology, but they're emotionally repressed and they've got Godzilla and blurry penises. So do you see what I'm saying? For every good, there's a bad. There can't be a perfect country. So patriotism is always going to have its caveats, no matter where you are.
You raise several interesting points that there are definitely differences among countries. I would hesitate to say that that would mean that one country is inherently better. Some places are better to live, sure. I mean, I would much rather live here than North Korea.
Well, that's offensive.
But I mean, I would also much rather live in Sweden. Sweden has better equality rights than we have here. So there's swings and cons.
Yeah, and pros and roundabouts. But you've got to build your own furniture in Sweden.
Well, actually, I'd argue that given that they're the home of IKEA, that you don't have to do as much furniture building there than you would here. I'd imagine that it comes pre-made.
Oh, so now you're all for the idea of making someone build stuff for you. Didn't you slag off the British Empire for that? There are many possible sources of national pride, from big blue and yellow warehouses full of Flugblomster to a nation's own way of speaking. That's right, language. Due to patriotism, many countries are sticking to their guns and continuing to say things wrong, on purpose. In some cultures, this is little more than a way to communicate secretly behind our backs and criticise our dentistry. But in others, where their native language is dying out, attempts to keep it alive help to maintain a sense of identity. Take Welsh, for example, where once they had enough native speakers to fill an area the size of Wales, now there's only a few left, leaving it as precarious as a poorly assembled Klepstadt. To find out more, I spoke to Welsh language advocate and presumed tattoo model Gethid, all about the fight to keep it relevant. Now, the Welsh language is a great source of national pride, isn't it? There's a real push to keep it alive. Well, keep it PG, please. This is pre-watershed. But wouldn't a greater source of national pride be if anyone had any idea what you're actually saying, so you could tell them how good Wales is, for example? That's not true. I've never paid for it in my life. But don't you think, say, getting nominated for a Best Picture Oscar for one of your films would be an amazing source of pride? You know, now that's not going to happen in Welsh, is it? I mean, no one ever gave 5 stars to Daffod Copperfield or Caerphilly Delphia, did they?
Right, mana.
I'll be honest, I've got no idea what he's saying. This language really is hanging by a thread.
I'm saying you don't know what you're on about. It's about heritage, not Oscars, you buffoon.
Yep. No idea. So what's going on with the accent, Femi? Are you so ashamed to be British, you've gone with every other accent you can find and put it into one?
So this is a problem with being born in Darlington, then moving to Middlesbrough, Swansea, Dundee, Birmingham.
Everybody talk about pop music.
Nottingham and London, and then watching pretty much Keenan and Kel and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air exclusively as a child, that my accent is just basically a mix of everything.
Yeah, well, I watched Mr. Blobby, Pingu and the Kumars at number 42 when I was a boy, but you don't hear me sounding like that. So you're lucky you didn't watch those programs, I guess.
Yeah, probably.
So when is it okay to feel national pride? When do you feel it?
I do feel a lot of national pride, especially when I go abroad. I identify as the British guy whenever I'm abroad.
Do you think that the reason you're more proud when you go away is because you're not near any British people reminding you how bad they are?
Yeah, I think so. I think you often end up making it a huge part of your identity that you're the British guy, especially when I'm in places like America.
Well, do you feel it more in America because they mock us? I mean, even the most staunchly anti-national pride person becomes a flag-waving patriot when an American on social media slags off beans on toast. We go, yeah, well, you eat cheese in a can and shoot your mates. So would that help, do you think, having more Americans criticize our meals?
Yeah, I think a lot of nationalism does stem from scapegoating other countries, so especially when they put tea into microwaves, and at which point I then think we should head back over there and retake the place, but...
Yeah, or putting tea into the Boston Harbor. But is that something we could be proud of then? Our kettles?
So there's lots of stuff that we're proud of because of the stuff that we've done, the culture we've created, the food that we... Well, not necessarily make, but at least the food that we have, because we have the food from everywhere, and you can find the food from everywhere in every town. And that's one of the things that makes us great.
Yes, but think about how we have the food from everywhere, Femi.
Well, I mean, we have lots of Italian, and I don't think it was that way around. I think the Romans did more of the colonizing of us rather than us doing it of them.
Oh, yeah. Cheers, Romans. Roads, aqueducts, and Bella Italia. What a legacy. Well... And even still, the Portuguese didn't colonize us, or the Mexicans. So how do you explain Nando's and Oaxaca?
Well, there is a link between the fact that we went to those countries and the fact that we took people from those countries and the fact that we then created those ties that then lead with us getting the culture back here. That kind of attitude is problematic, but I think it's about trying to make the best of where we are now.
So then, is an empire and all the wrongs that come with an empire just the cost of making your nation delicious?
No.
And is this how we change our global image? You know, push the angle that we are the tastiest nation?
We do need a rebrand once we do get to a place that's better.
And how do we do that?
We need to start tying the notion of national pride to the values that actually make us proud of this country.
SIF. Snickers. Myanmar. The rebrand. An age-old trick to change the way something is perceived by the public. And it's not just companies reinventing themselves to trick us into thinking they're new companies we haven't tried yet. People do it too. From musicians like David Bowie or Michael Jackson or David Bowie changing their outfit or face, to ex-girlfriends attempting to reinvent themselves with a fringe or fiancé. Of course, the rebrand isn't always successful. For every starburst, there's a pasta hut. But it has proven a foolproof method for sweeping a tricky history under the rug and starting afresh. Even countries have rebranded. Japan shifted from samurais to Pokemon. Turkey from kebabs to pretend dentists. Germany, once known for stony-faced efficiency, is now the home of exclusive dungeon-based nightclubs with leather dress codes. So could Britain rebrand? And how would we do it? To find out, I asked Rob Mosley from creative agency Nonsense, who is so good at rebranding, he used to be a child. So, Rob Mosley, didn't fancy a rebrand of that surname?
No, I didn't. I get asked that a lot, you know.
Listen, what makes a good rebrand?
Solving the problem that prompted the rebrand in the first place. I think, you know, brands can tarnish their own reputation really quite easily. And some of the time they need to change minds.
Do you think Britain needs a rebrand? What would you say Britain's current brand is worldwide?
We're kind of seen as posh and yobs at the same time.
Yeah, we're at war, aren't we? Between silver spoons and weather spoons.
And maybe always have been.
But either way, both groups agree, you must wear a poppy.
I think back all the way to colonial times, maybe we were thuggishly going around nicking stuff from around the world, but only the posh stuff. So we'll have all of your good things, actually, because we have refined taste, but we're taking it by force.
Well, maybe that becomes our rebrand. Imagine this. We lean into the colonial aspect and become the world's toxic ex. We've got lots of former colonies now out there thriving or surviving on their own. But there's something alluring, isn't there, about looking back on what once was and what still might be. So we go with Britain. Nothing is more comforting than the past. Or, the more direct, Britain. You up? Question mark? Kissed?
Okay. Very different. I like it. It might be hard for us to be progressive as a brand with that one. Like, if we want to start talking about new and interesting stuff we're doing, that might be an inhibiting brand position for us.
Well, okay. So is it important as a brand then, do you think, sort of universally, to be progressive?
I think what you're looking for your brand to do is to help you progress as a, in this case, a nation. And your brand should be trying to help you achieve that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, yes.
Yes.
Well, if it's modern and progressive you want, how about this? We do have the best food options in Europe. Food options, that is, not food. Let's not discuss how we have those options, but we've got a very diverse range. You go to Europe and sure, there's big chains, but beyond that, it's patatas bravas and those little mini sandwiches, baguettes things you see on the counter covered in flies. Disgusting. So we rebrand as Europe's Food Court. Come and have your dinner.
Nice. Like just blue water in nation form or whatever.
Absolutely. Exactly.
I think that would work really well. And it's a good metaphor for like a general melting pot of culture. And that's interesting, right? That's your strongest idea so far, Rhys.
Well, thanks, Rob. I thought of that one all by myself. Now, how about this? We've got an issue with statues. People pulling them down. Then we've got other people defending statues. Safe to say, we're a nation divided on sculpture. But best of both worlds, to help us acknowledge our past without wiping it away, replace the statues with Weebles. Now, the good thing about Weebles is, Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down, due to their round bottoms. So it's something for everyone, isn't it? Still a statue, but you can punch it if you like to take your anger out. It will tip, sure, but it will bounce back, thanks to good old-fashioned British resilience.
I love every aspect of this. And actually, weirdly, you kind of have, you think things that Britain's known for already, stiff upper lip and our fortitude in adversity and all of that malarkey. You're just leaning into that through cunning use of Weebles and...
Weebles. And we could change the national anthem, couldn't we, to Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba. You know the song, it goes, I get knocked down, but I can't say any more of the lyrics, or we'll have to pay.
And you inadvertently had what's called a sonic branding idea then. You know, like Intel have their little noise where it's like, do-do-do-do-do.
Well, that's cost us a fortune.
I guess any nation's bit of sonic branding is its national anthem, and Chumbawamba would certainly be an improvement on the dirge that we have at the moment with God Save the Queen. Nobody knows the words.
Well, you certainly don't. It's God Save the King.
All these are options. I mean, I think improving people's quality of life and having a foreign policy that actually doesn't completely ruin the lives of hundreds of thousands of people would probably go a little bit further towards making us feel pride in our country. But Weebles could work too.
Weebles could work too, and I'm glad you said it correctly. Now, what would it take, Femi, for you to go out and defend your country? What would have to happen?
Yeah, this is the common question that's being asked of millennials and Gen Z. Would you go to war? Would you fight for your country? Would you die for your country? I think if we were actually under attack, then yeah, I'd fight. I'd fight immediately.
Well, what would you do if the country attacking us were in the right?
If the country attacking us was in the right...
So, for example, if
the population of Yemen, yeah, having suffered 300,000 deaths because of a Saudi coalition that was being armed by Britain,
yeah,
and so the country of Yemen at some point in the future decided to take revenge on Britain for our complicity in the war crimes committed there...
Exactly.
Would I fight Yemen knowing that they had a just argument against us? I think I would, on the basis that wiping us out is not an appropriate response to us selling weapons that have caused genocide there. I think on the principle of proportionality, I would want to defend the UK.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the example I was going to say. So, you know, thanks for getting ahead of me and asking yourself that question and then answering it.
You're welcome.
You design, like, they have toilets that have got robots that wash your ass for
now,
you.
Now, Rob, what
you
about know, it's just, pubs?
It's Rob, the same Rob, sort of kooky madness.
Yeah, Rob.
Sorry, mate.
Learn from it. Now, Britain is famous for pubs. Britain's also considered to be on its last knees at the moment worldwide. When is there a bum rush at a pub? Right before the end when the bell rings. So, we lean into both of these things and present it as Britain. Last orders. Suddenly, everyone's rushing to us trying to get one last go, and then we just do a lock-in. They talk about not letting foreigners in. What if we don't let them out?
Yeah, and then we probably need to do another rebrand immediately afterwards, you know, after we've cleaned up.
What if we don't clean up? What if we just make it one constant night out?
Amazing, yeah. So it's just, we just become the nation of nightlife.
Or the nation of nighttime. You know, we do something like, you know, change daylight savings time once a week or whatever so that it's permanently dark.
How would that help?
Well, the second you arrive, it's dark, you think it's nighttime, you're ready for that night out.
You just get a shot at passport control on arrival, like, just like a little vodka or whatever to just welcome you.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, thanks.
So what you think it'd be like, you know, when you get to Hawaii and they give you that lei?
Exactly. We need our version of that. Maybe that's like, that's probably a pint, isn't it? With a handle.
Yeah, you're handed a pint with a handle and you're forced to down it, perhaps.
You're not allowed in unless, like, you can successfully get it down you before baggage reclaim. So you get a bit of time in the wiggly line.
Yeah, it's called a queue, but I suppose you've rebranded that as well now.
Yeah.
Now, what about fear factor? Filmmakers know nothing is creepier than little well-spoken English children, ideally twins, standing unblinking at the end of a corridor. And we're one of the oldest countries, so we've got more ghosts than anyone. Why not lean into that and haunt loads of tourists? Bit of dry ice, some echoey voiceovers. Suddenly, everyone's scared of us. They give us good trade deals so they don't get haunted. We're back to being not a superpower, but a supernatural power. Tagline, Britain. Don't be afraid of the dark past.
I like it. Like, if you were looking at the strategy behind it, sort of Britain is the world's big, bad, bad ghost guy to begin with.
Well, exactly. If we're the big, bad, bad ghost guy, then why don't we go simply with Great Britain? Boo.
Amazing.
What do you think? Good strap lines?
I like it, yeah.
Femi, should we just get rid of all borders? Would that be the solution to this whole issue? I mean, it would improve things immediately with no borders in the world whatsoever. Instantly, you'd eradicate drug trafficking and people trafficking because there'd be no borders to smuggle things over. You know, everyone would technically be on the coast. There's no third world countries anymore. We could all be equally proud of our one big country.
I mean, that... cultural differences are useful. I think it's important to maintain cultural differences. However, yeah, borders in general just divide people. So if we did in like 1,000 years end up as one big world, that would be a better world.
But it would be a worse World Cup, wouldn't it? Because, you know, yes, we'd have one super team with all the best players in it, but we'd have no one to play against. So we'd also be the worst team.
You do raise a good point there.
Who do you support in the World Cup, Femi? Everyone we've wronged?
If we're playing in the Euros or the World Cup, then I go full nationalist. I'm painting myself with the English flag, St. George's flag, all of myself. I've got photos, which are sadly on Instagram.
Is that the last time you were proud then, when we did well in the Euros?
2012 was the one I look at the most, as when we were the proudest because of the Olympics. So we were really on the national stage. Well, that was really cool. I remember painting myself with the Union Jack at the time.
Well, for someone who's so critical of national pride, you sure paint yourself with the flag of the country quite a lot. I mean, how many times are you painting the flag on your face a year?
Probably about 70.
Would you hang the England flag out of your window?
Potentially, but I think that once we get to a place where we have a better relationship with our sense of national pride, I'll feel a lot more comfortable showing the flag about.
So you wouldn't want a flag on your house, just on your face and body. Do you think instead of rebranding Britain, Rob, we just need to rebrand National Pride so it's not as dodgy? Because you probably wouldn't want to hang a flag out of your window or paint it on your face, would you?
I do think that, unfortunately, there is like a sort of spectrum of where National Pride can bleed over into nationalism and negative aspects of nationalism. And I think that we have allowed some of the icons that make up Brand Britain to be appropriated by radicals, and how we claim them back is important, because it would be nice to have more national pride. Like when I travel, you know, you see people are super proud of their countries.
So is it a perspective thing? You know, a country's quite abstract, hard to be proud of that. But, you know, people have kids. Kids do bad things. They misbehave all the time. They do rubbish drawings, and yet people are proud of them. So do we just need to look at it like that?
I guess the Russians have been calling it Mother Russia for forever, right? And they've got it baked into their internal brand of like what it is to be. And they're particularly proud, aren't they, of their country?
Yeah, and that's despite everything. So it's just saying it's your mum.
It's your mum, and you're not allowed to disagree with her.
It's your mum.
I had learned a lot speaking to Rob and Femi. I had learned that dough balls are the result of Julius Caesar, that sonic branding has little to do with hedgehogs, and that there's something going on in a place called Yemen. But the concept of pride still raised more questions for me than it answered. Is pride even possible if it's at the expense of others? It felt tricky to be proud of your kids, as it only put pressure on them, and I don't have any, and I'm blacklisted at most sports days. It felt un-British to take pride in yourself, as though being a Brit proud of Britain, I'd be breaking a cultural tradition of self-deprecation, making it null and void. It felt pointless to be proud of the achievements of historical figures, when no one ever got anywhere standing on the shoulders of ghosts. But it didn't feel inherently bad to be proud of your country. After all, we all just want something to be proud of. Femi, one final question. What are you most proud of?
I feel very, very proud of my mum. Mum's the best person I know.
And then it struck me. An idea I had come up with all by myself. A nation isn't just a nation, nor is it a child. In fact, it is you who is a child to your country. Britain is our mummy, for she is where we came from. The motherland, the United Kingdom. And thus, our pride and love for her doesn't need to be explained, for it is a feeling we cannot control. Ask anyone why they love their mum, and they'll try to rationalize it by telling you she's kind and makes lovely dinners. But we know the truth. She is no kinder than a Swedish mum. Her dinners are no lovelier than that of an Italian mum. In fact, they're worse. You love her because she is your mum. Yes, she's got a past. We all do. Yes, she can sometimes come round unannounced and use up all your resources. And yes, she can be quite vocal when she goes abroad. I'm not asking you to put up bunting of your mother. I'm not asking you to paint your face with your mother's face. I'm asking you to love your mum without diminishing all the other mums. Ask not what you can do for your mum. Ask what your mum can do for you. She can embrace her rebrand by getting that short haircut they all get eventually. She can throw away the world's best mum mug you bought her, because world's best mum mugs are racist. And above all, she can take all the details of her filthy, filthy past and keep them to herself. Britain. Mum's the word.
Cafod Research A is Griffello.
Oh, not this Welsh again for the credits.
I performio gan Rhys James.
Well, don't slag him off. He wrote and performed the thing, and he's handsome.
We ensin vis question Femi Oluwole, a Rob Mosley.
Well, those were our guests, and they were nice.
Fiis in Hirchweed gan Carl Cooper.
Well, yes, he produced the whole thing. A lot of hard work.
Achin Hirchweed Ive Tredieth gan Peter Strauss.
I never heard of him.
Road Ian gin Hirkiad, BBC Studios Argi for BBC Radio 4.
I mean, this guy's not even Welsh, he's clearly Italian. Nothing wrong with that.
On BBC Radio 4.
Cleopatra was born closer in time to the building of the Eiffel Tower than the pyramids at Giza. Oh, we love a fact, don't we?
A fresh take on the ancient world from the comedian and classicist Natalie Haynes.
Cleopatra's family tree is basically 47 men who are all called Ptolemy. I am simply not joking.
Natalie Haynes stands up for the classics.
Only Cicero would take offence because an actual Egyptian queen wasn't impressed enough by him.
Monday mornings at 9:30 on BBC Sounds and Radio 4.